Of course, it's wrong to take the law into your own hands. But would you ever be tempted? If you knew the exact place and time to find a criminal, and you felt that a prison sentence wasn't enough, would you ever feel justified in going full vigilante hero? What if the victim was your child? This is the story of Gary Ploche, the Louisiana dad who killed his son's abuser, and it was all caught on tape. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here. I'm a Midwesterner who now lives in New York City, putting my writing degree to use by researching true crime cases that interest me, and hopefully you. And hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. This is an old story, but it's been in the news again lately, so my usually crime uninterested best friend sent me an article about it. I kind of knew the story, but I thought you might want to take a deeper look with me. It started in January 1983 when 10-year-old Joseph Jody Boyce Ploche and his brothers were put into karate lessons in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The boys had gotten flyers for the karate classes at school, and although fifth grader Jody had tossed his, one of his brothers brought his home. Their mom soon signed them up. Their coach was 24-year-old Jeffrey Paul Doucette, whom one dad would say had an ability to take over the minds of children, like a mesmerizing power. I guess Doucette must have just been a cool older guy with a very particular set of skills. This was just months before the original Karate Kid would be released and karate mania would sweep the United States. But it turns out that Doucette wasn't only mesmerizing to children. He became a fixture at the Ploche home, where everyone loved him. It started one night when Jody's dad invited Doucette over for a family dinner, taking pity on him because he didn't have friends and family in the area. The karate coach was fun, and soon he was taking everyone to the movies and skating. Jody saw him as a best friend, and Jody's parents saw him as a blessing. But by August of that year, Leon Gary Ploche, who went by Gary, feared that it might not just be board game night that Doucette was coming over for. He was worried that his wife, June, might be having an affair with Doucette. Gary and June separated. On the morning of February 19, 1984, Doucette came to pick up 11-year-old Jody to run an errand and told his mom they'd return in a little while. Doucette's brother would later say that Doucette's relationship with Jody's mom, June, was not strictly platonic. Maybe it's partly why she had no problem sending Jody off with him at first. But when Doucette didn't come back with Jody after a few hours, she called the sheriff. By that time, Doucette had driven to his mom's house in Texas and grabbed his brother's birth certificate so he could get a fake ID. He and his little kidnappee boarded a bus the next morning, bound for Disneyland. Doucette shaved his beard and dyed Jody's blonde hair black.
He didn't have a plan, so he really didn't tell me much like, oh, you know, we'll be out there. He just said that, you know, you're my son. I'm gonna tell people you're my son. So it's the first time I saw the Hollywood sign, too. As a kid, I was excited. I was like, wow, look, I got chills looking at the Hollywood sign. Then we took a bus that day, same day, to Anaheim, and then the next day we went to Disneyland.
Doucette made a call at one point to Jody's mom to let her know her son was still alive. Newspapers from the time reported that Doucette was both threatening her and trying to throw her off the scent, saying that the only way she would ever see Jody again is if she brought her other kids and met him in New York. But he didn't know the authorities were listening. And when Jody called home on the 10th day of his abduction, they were able to trace that call back to a motel in Anaheim, California. Jody's mom was still on the line when the FBI raided the motel and rescued her son. Jody denied that Doucette had done anything to him because he was worried that his abuser would get out of prison after a few years and come after him. Jody wanted to be able to say that he wasn't the one who told on Doucette.
The next day, he's flown back home to Louisiana, where his family is waiting at the airport.
As a parent in your position, did you learn anything from this?
Just how much I love my children. I might be a little bit more protective or overprotective, I don't know.
March 1st, an emotional family reunion at New Orleans International Airport. Gary, June, meet Jody after his unexpected California visit.
Where's that gorgeous blonde hair? Are you okay? Honey, are you okay?
How do y'all feel now?
Fantastic. Fantastic. This looks good. No, I love that backhand.
He doesn't at all.
What do you think about this whole thing?
I don't know.
But tests confirmed that Jody had been a victim of assault. Years later, he would talk about how the abuse started early on. They'd be doing stretches at karate class, and Doucette would put his hands between Jody's leg to point out how tight his inner thigh muscles were. That seemed innocent enough in context, and it normalized the idea of Doucette touching him in that area. But soon, Doucette was sending the other boys in the class out for snacks, giving them money to go down the street to the gas station, and keeping Jody behind to practice some quote-unquote extra kicks. The first time Jody woke up on a team retreat to Doucette outright groping him, Doucette asked him not to tell anyone. And Jody acted nonchalant, asking, "What do you mean? What did you do?" That's when Doucette knew he'd found the perfect victim. The abuse happened every day for 6 months, sometimes twice a day, after practice and after tournaments. Jody didn't want to upset his parents, so he didn't tell them what was happening to him. The family had once watched a TV special about a young girl being abused by her softball coach, and Gary said he'd kill anyone who laid a finger on his son. Jody believed him, and he didn't want his friend Doucette to die. Still, the burden of his secret weighed on him. On March 9th, the authorities told his parents that Jody's rectal slides from the examination after the kidnapping had come back positive for traces of semen. So his mom calmly approached him and said, "It means Jeff fooled with you." And that was Jody's chance. He said he immediately came clean and felt such a weight lift from his shoulders because he'd finally been able to be honest. But as calm as his mother was about the situation, his father wasn't. On March 16th, 1984, deputies were bringing Doucette back from California to Louisiana through the Baton Rouge Airport at 9 p.m. He probably would have been put in prison for life. But Jody's dad, 38-year-old Gary Plochet, had learned from someone at a local news station when his son's abuser would be arriving. He wore sunglasses and a baseball cap to lie low. Couldn't help himself with that nice, tight, purple-striped shirt, though. Still, no one noticed that he was waiting at a payphone as Doucette walked by with his law enforcement escorts. It's almost like something out of a movie, Doucette seeming to smirk for the news crew as Gary turned and fired one shot at close range right into the brain of his son's abuser. Doucette was taken to a hospital in critical condition, but a doctor said his death was virtually certain. He died within 24 hours. A deputy took Gary into custody without a struggle and said, "Gary, why? Why, Gary? Why in the hell would you do something like this?" Reports on what Gary replied are mixed, but it was something to the effect of, "If it were your kid, you would have done the same thing, too."
Did you ask Gary why?
I didn't have to. Now, it's probably when I said to him, "The least you could have done was let me drive you."
The sad thing is that minutes before this happened, Gary was on the airport payphone with a friend. That friend called the sheriff in the East Baton Rouge Parish and told them what was about to happen just before Doucette was escorted through the airport. It was too late. The friend was on the phone with Gary again when he heard the shot ring out. Gary had said to him, "Here he comes. You're about to hear a shot." Gary was charged with second-degree murder but was freed on bond after his friends offered up $100,000. He was then taken in for a psychiatric evaluation and diagnosed with major depression, single episode, with psychotic features. He said he'd been hearing voices. His lawyer said Gary was having hallucinations that God was speaking to him, telling him to kill Doucette or he would do it again to other children. Gary's lawyer called it a divine mandate and said Gary had a single sense of mission. That was, he and only he should protect his family. June still said she loved him, and all of his family supported him. Jody went into counseling. Doucette's brother, the one who said June Plochet and Doucette had a not strictly platonic relationship, claimed that Doucette called their mom before he was killed and said he wanted to clear up those pesky kidnapping charges so he could be with June, Jody, and the other kids. Doucette allegedly said that he loved Mrs. Plochet and her children and wanted them all to be together. He thought that since some of his belongings should still be in the Plochet home, that would prove he had just a regular old relationship with June and wasn't into children. I'm not sure any of it proves anything at all, but several sources do seem to back up the idea that he was dating June after her separation. Of course, he could have been dating her to get to Jody. In November 1984, Gary Ploche was indicted by a grand jury for second-degree murder. The following May, he negotiated a deal to plead no contest to a lesser charge of manslaughter. The maximum sentence was 21 years in prison, but a psychiatrist who examined Gary said he couldn't tell the difference between right and wrong at the moment he shot Doucette. The judge in the case said that both sides were victims, both sides suffered, and prison time would do nothing for Gary. So, although he gave Gary 7 years, it was suspended, meaning he was able to walk away with no prison time, just 5 years probation and 300 hours of community service. He served out his sentence cutting the grass at a local church and trying to put his family back together again. He and June never divorced in the end. Jody says his dad got lucky, although he felt bitter and gave his dad the Sila treatment for a while. He was glad in a way, though, that Gary was there at home during the recovery process instead of in prison. Jody said that the protection child abusers have is that they gain the affection and trust of the kid, so the kid doesn't want anything bad to happen to the person hurting them. It's like, I wish my friend Jeff would stop doing this awful thing to me, but he's still my friend. Still, Jody understood and forgave his dad. Gary died in 2014 at the age of 68 after having a series of strokes. Today, some people still consider him a vigilante hero. Jody says that when he posts videos online, people won't comment to tell him his gumbo looks great or whatever. They'll say, your dad's a hero. Right up until the end, Gary said he didn't regret killing Doucette and he would do it again. Right after the murder, Gary's lawyer said he was thinking rationally in general, but he still wasn't thinking rationally about the shooting because he still felt he had to do it. And I'm like, is that irrational? I really, truly don't think I would kill someone, ever, in life. But I always say that if someone killed my husband or my best friend or whatever, and I wasn't getting the justice I needed, I can absolutely see a world where I would feel compelled to go vigilante. The fear of prison would probably hold me back, though. Probably. But for people who feel like our justice system doesn't work, Gary is a symbol of doing what it takes. Jody doesn't condone his behavior, though. But remember how Gary said he felt he had to kill Doucette, or the man would abuse other children? He certainly wasn't wrong to think that. Because it turns out that 3 years prior, a different father called the police on Doucette. Twice. The man's 11-year-old son was taking karate lessons, and Doucette began fixating on the kid. The father removed his son from Doucette's school, but he still had to call the cops twice when Doucette wouldn't leave the kid alone. The dad said, he used to call me and cry like a little baby over the telephone because I wouldn't let him see my little boy anymore. The sheriff's deputies who escorted Doucette from California to Louisiana said he told them he'd been abused as a child himself and couldn't name the number of children he'd abused. He didn't just groom children, he groomed whole families. Jody says he prayed at night for the abuse to stop, but he didn't want Doucette dead, and he certainly didn't want his dad to be the one to cause him harm. He said, I would advise any parent whose child's been molested to be there for their child and not to take the law into your own hands and put yourself in a position to be prosecuted. Jody went on to be a high school sports star, got his college degree, serves on boards of anti-violence organizations, and gets recognized and awarded for his efforts. But he has always remained single and says he doesn't want kids, probably because of what happened to him. Now 53 years old, Jody is an advocate for child abuse victims and published his memoir, Why, Gary, Why, in 2019 to prevent abuse and give hope to survivors. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.